Welcome back to Logical with Ludmila, where we untangle the legal knots so that you don't have to. I'm Ludmila Malova, a U.S. qualified lawyer based in Dubai. And in each episode, we break down complex law into clear, practical insights you can actually use. And in today's episode, we're going to be talking about how the UAE's crypto legislative framework really works, what is required, why it's demanding, and what makes it worth it. Okay, so let's start with the introduction. The UAE is, as many would have heard, is one of the most crypto-friendly jurisdictions in the world. But crypto-friendly does not mean crypto-easy. In recent years, some might have heard, the UAE has taken bold steps, such as at a federal level, signing an MOU with a crypto.com platform to allow government fees to be paid in regulated digital currencies. In other words, actually, for Dubai, for Abu Dhabi courts in particular, there is an initiative to pay fees through crypto. That's a pretty bold move. And once that is live, this will be the region's perhaps first government-wide crypto payment system. At our Emirate-based in Dubai, there was a recent announcement about Dubai Land Department and its and the Dubai's own virtual asset regulator. This could one day allow fractional property ownership recorded on blockchain, which means that, for example, a villa worth 1 million dirhams could be split into 1,000 tokens, each worth 1,000 dirhams, opening up the market to smaller investors, improving liquidity and streamlining transactions. For now, however, tokenization remains in the pilot phase, and it's not legally recognized or permitted in practice. But the agreement between DLD, or the Dubai Land Department, and VARA signals clear intent. With the right framework, tokenization could redefine property ownership and investment in the UAE. These initiatives make headlines. As a result, many entrepreneurs, local and international, want to set up a crypto business in the UAE. But here's a catch. Many want to do it quickly and cheaply. And this is the backdrop for today's discussion. The UAE is undoubtedly a very crypto-friendly jurisdiction, but friendly does not mean simple. Setting up a crypto company here requires approvals at multiple levels, detailed compliance obligations, and substantial financial commitments. And that's where reality hits. So let's kind of start at a high level. And why I actually wanted to talk about this at present is because we've had recently a number of clients who approached us about setting up a crypto business. And as many would relate, a lot of the people that are in crypto and perhaps that understand crypto are a younger generation. The younger generation who perhaps, I mean, not to stereotype, but perhaps were able, if they understood crypto early on, were able to do quite financially well and fairly quickly. As a result, there's this perhaps expectation of being able not only to do something quickly, but to do it at a fairly profitable rate and without much regulatory compliance. And by the way, the very nature of crypto and its appeal to many is that there isn't really much regulation. So what has happened recently is that we've had a number of clients who, on the back of the UAE's headlines about being crypto-friendly and attracting crypto industries into the UAE, a lot more people are interested, obviously, in the UAE, perhaps as a home base, headquarters for their crypto activities and crypto business. Now, so that's, you know, that's kind of one side of it. Then the other side, as I mentioned earlier, those who are in this industry in particular tend to want to do things quickly, and perhaps without much kind of regulatory oversight, and that's perhaps also because, as I mentioned earlier, the definition, the very nature of crypto is that it's kind of outside of the regulation as we know it. The questions we've had is that, okay, well, we know that Dubai is very friendly to crypto, so we want to set up a crypto company, but we want to do it quickly, we want to do it cheaply, and we kind of the minimal disclosure and compliance requirements. It is not, however, so simple. And so the purpose of today's discussion is to explain the multi-tiered structure of setting up a crypto business in the UAE. To kind of layer that on is for those who either are new to the UAE or have done business in the UAE would know that the UAE obviously is it's a country with 7 emirates. And so there's the federal laws and there is the emirate specific laws. So with regards to setting up a company, it's very much, it starts with an emirate. So first, before you decide to set up a crypto business, you need to decide which emirate you want to be set up in, because from there it kind of governs what the structure and which authorities you will have to comply with in order to set up a business. So, but be it as it may, first you start with actually setting up a commercial license. And a commercial license, depending again on where, which emirate, it can be set up on the mainland or it can be set up in the free zone. And the mainland is the authority, the sort of the mainland companies are governed by the authorities called the Department of Economic Development, or DET. And the free zones are obviously governed by their own kind of free zone authorities. Depending on the emirate, there is so many different free zones. Dubai has the largest number of the free zones. And Abu Dhabi, Ras Al Khaimah, they have their own free zones. So before you decide to set up a business in a crypto business in the UAE, think about which emirate you want to be based in. So is it Dubai? Is it Abu Dhabi? And perhaps on that note, for the time being, the three emirates that have made the headlines in the crypto space are Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and Ras Al Khaimah. In terms of opening up a crypto business, it would have to be emirate specific. There is no such thing as a federal UAE company. So it will have to be based either in Dubai or Ras Al Khaimah or Abu Dhabi. And this is why these specific emirates are important to discuss, because these are the three emirates that actually offer some kind of a crypto regime. Going back to setting up the company, so first you need to set up a license, and that's a commercial license, either on the mainland or in the free zone. So once you've chosen emirate, you need to decide where in the emirate you want to set up. Either if it's a mainland, obviously it's just a one authority. If it's a free zone, which free zone? After the commercial license, and this is just kind of give you a roadmap, a high level roadmap. After the commercial license, any kind of crypto activities will also have to be approved by a specific crypto-related regulatory authority. So in Dubai, that authority is called VARA, or Virtual Asset Regulatory Authority. Within Dubai, there's two different authorities. One is, it's called the mainland or most of Dubai, and that's governed by VARA. And then there's within Dubai, there's also another specialized economic zone, which is called the Dubai International Financial Center, or DIFC. Now, that's not only a free zone, it also has its own legal framework, an independent legal framework and independent laws and its own courts and such. So if you want to set up a crypto business in the DIFC, then that would not be subject to VARA. It would be subject to DFSA, which is the Dubai Financial Services Authority, which is another regulatory authority. So remember, this is kind of a layering on to, first it's a commercial license, and then the commercial license has to be approved by, if it's mainland Dubai, it would be VARA. If it's within the DIFC, it would be DFSA. So once you have a commercial license, then you have to apply for approvals from one of these crypto regulators. And then there's at a federal level, because remember we talked about the Emirates specific, then at a federal level, there may also, depending on specific activities, there may also be needs to apply for approvals from either Securities and Commodities Authority, and that's the federal, the UAE Securities and Commodities Authority is often known as ESCA, another acronym, or the UAE Central Bank. And we can talk about specifically which crypto licenses or which crypto type of businesses would also require this additional approval. As you can imagine, so to think of it at a high level, it's like a three-tiered application. So you start with Emirate-specific commercial license, which then you need to obtain approvals from the specific crypto regulatory authority for that license. And then depending on your crypto activities, you may also require approvals from either ESCA or the UAE Central Bank. As you can imagine, because of this multi-layered system, setting up a crypto business in the UAE is not simple. It is costly, it's timely, and it's quite complex. On that note, just to help you can contextualize what that means in practical terms. So in Dubai under the VARA, which is perhaps the most talked about or the most advertised regulatory crypto authority, there are at present there are 36 companies that have been licensed by VARA. We are now at almost kind of the end of 2025. And VARA was introduced 2 years ago in 2023. Two and a half years, there have been cumulatively 36 licenses or companies that have been licensed. That's not a huge number. And that's all because because of this very complex qualification process for setting up anything to do with crypto. And that's where obviously we're talking about if somebody wants to do it by the book, if somebody wants to do it in compliance with the UAE laws. There's obviously a lot of outfits and a lot of people that are doing business in the UAE, in Dubai in particular, that are dealing with crypto, that call themselves kind of in crypto-specific or crypto businesses, but they're not actually properly licensed by the relevant authorities. Okay, so now let's kind of zero in on the first tier, which is the commercial license, and in particular Dubai. Dubai, for obvious reasons, it seems to often lead the way in anything to do with kind of commercial development and the types of licenses that are available, and also that's one of the reasons why Dubai has so many different free zones, or economic zones, in addition to its mainland, as compared to other Emirates. So as a result, Dubai has perhaps the largest number of options of where you can set up or you can consider setting up your crypto business in terms of the economic zone. So if you set up on the mainland, remember now, this is outside of the DFC. So if you set up on the mainland, that is covered by DET, or Department of Economy and Tourism, previously known as the Department of Economic Development, or DED. So these days the acronym is DET. So if you set up on the mainland, you will be applying through to DET for this kind of a crypto license. Now, and DET, by the way, now has specific crypto-related activities. The specific code that applies to each activity. So, for example, there is a code for the virtual asset advisory services. There's also a specific license for virtual asset custody services. There's one for exchange. So, again, virtual assets exchange services and virtual assets investment management services and virtual assets broker dealer services. So each one of these is a separate license, and depending on your business proposition, it's also possible to combine some of these licensing activities under one commercial license. Though they're subject to cumulative fees. That's just Dubai. And by the way, these specific licensing categories under DET match fairly closely the VARA designations and the VARA type of crypto services activities. Which makes it easier when you apply, if you do apply for crypto license through DET. Now, other economic zones within Dubai that have also, I guess, touted themselves as kind of crypto-friendly are at least three other ones, and that's IFZA, DMCC, and DWTC. I guess let's talk about DWTC, that's the Dubai World Trade Center, free zone, and why we talk about that, because most notably, Binance has chosen DWTC as its regional headquarters for its crypto business. So that's perhaps an interesting kind of starting point. And that's also because the DWTC has signed a special arrangement with VARA. Obviously trying to kind of position itself as a specifically crypto-friendly free zone. That's DWTC. The other free zone is IFZA, which is the International Free Zone Authority. That's another economic free zone within Dubai that is also fairly crypto-friendly. And it too offers, in terms of licensing activities or categories that you can apply, it's just advisory, custody, exchange, borrowing and lending, virtual asset management investment, and broker, dealer, transfer and settlement, and proprietary trading licenses or services. So these, each one of these, once again, is a separate licensing activity, and depending on your business proposition, depending on your type of license, you may be able to combine some of these under the same umbrella. As you can tell, this is, you know, both DET and IFSA are very crypto-friendly, specifically to the point of where they, if you decide to apply for a crypto license and you go onto their portal and you put in crypto, there'll be a drop-down menu of all the different type of crypto-related virtual asset related activities that you can choose to include into your commercial license. And then there's also the DMCC, or the Dubai Multi Commodity Center, that is also quite friendly to crypto and has set up its own crypto sort of forum to encourage crypto investors and crypto business into the free zone. And by the way, if you go into the VARA public register of companies registered under VARA, there's a number of DMCC companies that are listed on its public register, which basically means that the DMCC as well has quite a few companies, crypto-related companies set up. Now, they, from what appears on VARA, you could tell that DMCC has similar commercial activities or licensing activities that are reflected on the VARA website or the register. But it may require a little bit more due diligence in terms of figuring out which activities to choose, because if you go onto DMCC kind of public register of or type of companies licensing activities that exist, it doesn't necessarily list out all the current or the detailed crypto activities as they exist, for example, in DET and IFSA. It could just be a matter of time before they also make that available to the public. So just kind of in summary, in Dubai, we've got the DET, the mainland, we've got IFSA, the International Free Zone, you have the DMCC, the Dubai Multi-Commodity Center, and we have the DWTC, which is the Dubai World Trade Center, which is where the home of Binance. Now, within Dubai, there's also the DIFC, and the DIFC has its own crypto token regime, which is run and kind of managed by the Dubai Financial Services Authority, or DFSA, and focused specifically on financial services. So if you wanted to look at, do you want to set up in one of these outside of Dubai proper or within the DIFC, so anything to do with specifics of financial services, would perhaps DFC might be a better suited place for you to consider setting up. But for obviously everything outside of the specific financial services, Dubai has many other options to offer. Okay, so let's now talk about, we talked about the first tier, which is the setting of the commercial license. Now, let's talk about the next level. So once you've applied to the commercial license, this part of the application, also, there'll be the questionnaire that you'll have to, the authority, the economic authority, the business authority through which you're applying for the license will then apply to a specific regulator for the regulatory approval. As part of this questionnaire, this is kind of where the compliance kicks in, if you will. And that's a pretty detailed and a pretty scrupulous process in terms of what kind of businesses ultimately get their crypto license. And just to kind of give you an idea of what's in this questionnaire. So it's called the initial disclosure questionnaire, at least as far as VAR is concerned. But again, these requirements more or less match in DIFC, VARA, Abu Dhabi, and also in Ras Al Khaimah. Some of the requirements that those who are willing or interested in setting up crypto that you need to bear in mind, you will need to submit are, and these are just some examples at the high level, right? Because it's a fairly, and here I've got in front of me a copy of this, the Dubai, the VARA regulator, so that's the VARA book. and there's a lot more specifics in terms of what kind of compliance is required. And so for the purposes of today's discussion, obviously I'm not going to regurgitate everything that's in this guidebook, but there's sort of a high level. There is a requirement of regulatory business plan, and that's through which you will have to submit what your activities are, sort of the business model, their revenue streams, and then just the technology infrastructure, and then your risk management protocols, and then the governance structure and the financial projections. So it's not just application, but for the kind of just filling out the form and saying I want to practice this and this kind of activity. There's a very detailed regulatory business plan that's required to be submitted. Then additionally, you have to submit the ownership details, which is all shareholders and all the ultimate beneficiaries and their funding sources and their background. So this is a big element. And in particular, for a lot of, again, this comes from the back of experience with a few of our clients who have expressed interest in setting up. They're not necessarily kind of prepared to not just disclose this level of detail to the regulators in their application, but they didn't really quite were not really prepared or did not really plan on this compliance to be so strenuous. And that's perhaps on the back of the previous or the other types of businesses that are set up in the UAE and in Dubai in particular, and that is require a lot less due diligence and a lot less compliance in terms of just setting up or opening up a business, or setting up a license or having a license. But again, this is a very specific license. It's subject to considered ultimately kind of a regulated industry, and so therefore the requirements for disclosure and compliance are fairly stringent. So you have to be prepared to not only show your entire sort of business plan but you also have to be prepared to show the funding sources and kind of the proven concept of your business. Some of the other requirements include organizational chart, and kind of setting up who the board will be, the senior management, the compliance and the reporting lines. And there's very specific, the regulations have very specific protocols in terms of what is meant as compliance. What are the reporting lines and the board and their anti-money laundering practices and such. So there is a lot to process and a lot to keep in mind in sort of going through the process. Then some other documents will have to be submitted, and that's the CVs of the senior management. And ultimately, these CVs have to be drafted, not just accurately, but kind of with quite a bit of detail, demonstrating the relevant crypto and financial services experience. So it's not you're just going to ChatGPT and ask ChatGPT, draft me a CV. You will have to include your actual experience in the crypto and financial services, and it has to be truthful, and it has to also be verifiable. Now, how you verify it, there's different, obviously, ways of to verify it. This is kind of where you refer back to the book. And then one of the other kind of last important application of compliance requirement is the financial projections and also proof of capital. So this is, it may sound simple, but it's quite complex because obviously financial projections have to make sense, and for them to make sense, they have to be based on something specific. And the proof of capital, you're actually going to have to put to prove that you are financial liquid and able to monetarily support this kind of a license and this sort of activity. So as you can see, the initial disclosures, they are not just paperwork. The regulators use it to test whether your activity fits within the defined categories and whether your team is capable of running it responsibly. So additional to the senior management and shareholders are also tested for under what's called the fit and proper standards, which cover qualifications, experience, reputation, integrity, and solvency. Again, it's all in the regulations. If anybody wants to understand more what this fit for proper fit and proper standard is. And then, as I mentioned earlier, this is quite important, by the way, and fairly mentioned in quite a bit of detail in the regulations is the money laundering reporting officer. So when we talked about the board and the management, one of the requirements for this kind of a company or this sort of activity is that for every company to appoint a money laundering reporting officer who has specific experience, not just somebody from the street. It's somebody who has to have at least 2 years of AML experience. So in short, it's not really a formality. It's ultimately a fitness test for both businesses and the people behind it. So just to kind of understand more what goes into this fit and proper requirements is as I mentioned, the best way is the VAR guidebook or the rule book, and that clearly sets out the requirements for qualifications, that qualifications have to be the relevant academic and professional credentials. If you're dealing with crypto, if you're dealing with financial services, obviously in terms of relevant academic or professional credentials, they have to refer and to be based on one of those, either technology and crypto or sort of financial services. In addition to qualifications, you need to show that you've got the experience, and experience being in crypto and fintech, banking, payments, or financial services experience. For example, for the money laundering officers, they have, as I said earlier, they have to have at least 2 years of experience of AML compliance in an established organization that can be verified. Some of the other requirements for the upper management is the integrity and reputation of the shareholders and the senior management. There must not be any prior regulatory breaches or criminal convictions or insolvency. The shareholders also have to show sort of their financial standing or the financial solvency and ability to inject required capital. So you see, there's a fairly robust list of requirements, and I kind of want to pause here for a second because this is very, very different from so many other types of licenses or companies that are often set up in UAE and in Dubai, which don't really require anything like that. So you know, for other companies, when the business plan is presented, it can actually be and often has been drafted by. These days by ChatGPT or some other form of AI tool. So same with the CVs and basically entire application for other types of licenses can be done with the help of some of these AI tools. Well, for crypto licenses, this is a very different story. That will not fly. So you do need to be prepared to go through, to understand what these requirements are and to make sure that you have the relevant experience and relevant credentials and a way to verify it to the point of that you can actually present it to the regulators and that they can verify your data. So why I say this is because this obviously often, from our experience, has come kind of as a surprise to a few of our clients who had their own expectations of what it would require for them to start to set up a business and start running with it. And so this is why it's important that we kind of zero in on the different requirements and kind of the typical timeline and the process that one should expect to go through before you're able to actually have a license and before you're able to advertise yourself as a crypto business in the UAE. So the regulations have a lot more specific requirements in terms of what has to be presented as part of the questionnaire in order to be considered by the crypto regulatory authorities for that application to be considered. Some of the other perhaps financial requirements that could be interesting of note is that the proof of initial capital, and that has to be, and by the way, this has also been quite a surprise for a number of our clients, is that the proof of initial capital has to range from like 100,000 dirhams for advisory services up to 1.5 million if you're applying for exchange services. License. And then in terms of the financial projections, you have to be able to prepare financial projections for 1 to 3 years into the future, which again, not something that is typical in other kind of business setups. And you have to be prepared to show evidence of substantial and sustainable revenue source. So if you're doing it, just because you've done well financially in your own kind of personal wallet, you'll have to be prepared to show a sustainable revenue source over a certain period of time and demonstrate obviously the ability from the IT standpoint that you have the readiness and the sort of infrastructure and the staff to be able to support your business proposition. We can keep going back and forth to more of these obligations. In addition to the initial obligations and the compliance requirements, there's also there's whole sections about the ongoing obligations that parties need to be aware of and to make sure that they comply with in order to maintain the license. The regulators expect ongoing compliance, which includes filing regular reports, maintaining capital adequacy, updating policies as rules evolve, notifying regulators of any material changes in management, ownership, or operations. The burden of setting up is sort of for your first burden, your first hurdle, and then after that is that you have to make sure that you maintain your books and you maintain your practices to keep up with the evolving regulations, which are happening quite rapidly. To summarize in terms of the main takeaways for the qualification process, this qualification process is actually designed to filter out the opportunists. And so if you don't have a robust business plan and experienced leadership and solid capital backing, your application will either stall or fail. And perhaps this is exactly why in the past 2 years, as I mentioned earlier, there's only in Dubai and Vara, there's only 36 companies that have successfully cleared Vara's licensing process. And I know for a fact many more tried and many more applied. Now with regards to who should apply for this kind of robust license, a crypto license, I'll call it, for lack of a kind of simpler phrase, because it encompasses so many different types of licensing activities. Much of it is in the rule book, and I'll delve into some specifics, but I want to pause there for a second as well, because what we have seen from members of the public, from some of our clients, is that once they find out that these are the requirements, these are the compliance qualifications, and this is the process for them to apply for a crypto license, actually have a crypto license, they become very creative in terms of how they believe or in their interpretation that they do not need to apply for that kind of license. So the sort of the business model that they are entertaining, the business model that they are developing, does not rise to the level of the crypto services that would otherwise be covered by, let's say in Dubai by Vara, or in Abu Dhabi by ADGM or their financial services regulator. So in other words, they're trying to come up on the commercial level what kind of license to apply that will not trigger the requirements of approval from the crypto regulators. And we had this discussion recently with a client who tried to present their model, their crypto business model, as being very simple. And which, is not so simple, but simple, where they basically just kind of a middleman between somebody who is dealing with crypto and somebody who is selling a service. And so it's a middleman that offers this platform for somebody to provide a service or sell a good in exchange for crypto or virtual assets. And so it was interesting because in that case, the client was sort of maintaining that, well, that's a very simple model, and that particular business model should not require this level, this kind of type of specific license that would require all these approvals. Well, it's not actually the case, because if you think about it, I mean, just what I described in terms of what their plans was, it was exactly, so it's a dealer broker kind of a service that falls squarely under the Vara descriptions of specific licensing activities, which fall under its jurisdiction and therefore under its compliance requirements. So, for example, and you know, and this is what we had to do with the client in that case, is just go through the definition, say, okay, well, because they said, well, we're not doing this. Okay, let's read, what are you doing? Well, we're just basically holding money until a certain point of time. Like, well, that sounds like a custody service. So you go to the rule book, read, and it's more or less matches exactly what they're planning to do. Same thing with like, well, we're just trying to connect the parties. It's like, okay, well, let's go and read the definition of it in the VAR book. And that's the broker-dealer service that's clearly listed in VAR. And anything that's listed in VAR ultimately means that it falls under their jurisdiction and therefore under their requirements of, you know, compliance, disclosure, and qualifications and such. So I just wanted to throw out that example there because it made me realize, you know, A, how many crypto enthusiasts are out there that want to benefit from what they perceive to be the UAE's friendly crypto regime, but also, and then B, how they are not prepared to actually commit the resources and the time to do it the right way. And you know, perhaps see it either intentionally or not, how they're trying to sort of oversimplify what they actually do in order to kind of fall under the radar of the crypto regulators, which, you know, to be honest with you, is not really a way forward in the long run. It's not sustainable and certainly is not legal. And as we go through the process, I'm sure there will be a lot more stringent enforcement mechanism that will ensure that these kinds of practices or these sort of services are not allowed to exist in the UAE, as not to obviously taint its reputation, especially since we have so many different legal regimes to do it the right way. So going back to VAR, and as I said earlier, this is not so similar or so different from what's at the Abu Dhabi level or even in the Ras Al Khaimah, but in terms of the license categories, right? So there is one category, a specific category, it's called advisory services. And that, the definition for advisory services, is providing a personal recommendation to a client in respect of transactions or actions involving virtual assets. Well, I guess, you know, anything to do with advisory services in relation to virtual assets is called, I guess, by definition, is an advisory service, which means falls under the crypto regulator's mandate. The other type of activity, or licensed activity, is called broker-dealer services. And this is the definition. There's a more robust definition in the book, but it, sort of in summary, it's arranging or soliciting orders, accepting fiat or crypto for trades, and then facilitating matches, making a market, or distributing, issuing virtual assets. So in our, you know, my previous client's case, so this was basically they were doing exactly that, except that they were trying to make it sound like something else. But anytime you create, you provide sort of a service for two parties to come together, ultimately you are a dealer, you are a broker, you are a mediator, and that's the very definition of broker-dealer service. That's the second category. The third is custody services. And that's safekeeping of virtual assets for clients and acting only on verified instructions. Once again, this was another one of these discussions we've had with clients where they said, no, we don't do custody. You know, we don't do escrow service. We're just basically only holding money for clients until the instructions are verified, and then we release them. Well, I said, okay, well, let's go back into the rule book and read the definition of the custody services and the VAR. Well, that's the very definition. It's keeping money for clients or virtual assets from a client and acting only on verified instructions. So that too would fall under the crypto regulator's mandate. And then obviously there's the exchange services. You know, that's perhaps a lot more many more people are prepared to that this kind of a license would require this sort of level of compliance. And that's, you know, that's conducting exchanges between virtual assets and fiat, or between different virtual assets, or matching orders, or maintaining an order book. So that's the exchange services. And that's a specific license. Then there is the lending and borrowing services, which is transferring or lending virtual assets under a contract with the borrower's obligation to return the same virtual asset later. So I guess more or less sort of simple, same definition of lending and borrowing as it existed in the more traditional world, but includes virtual assets. And even that, by the way, is important to highlight. Even that is subject to the crypto regulations, which means that if you're just using your virtual assets as a collateral for some kind of lending facilities, then that too falls and qualifies part of the sort of the crypto regime, and therefore subject to the same requirements. And then there's the management and investment of services. That's another category of license, and that's in essence means acting as an agent and fiduciary or a manager for an entity's virtual assets, including administration, disposition, or investment. So that's perhaps you'll see more of these kinds of licenses set up in the financial free zones, in the DIFC or ADGM, because it deals more with management investment of ultimately financial assets. So that's a very specific category under VAR as well. And then there is the transfer and settlement services, which is another type of service, which is involves transmitting or settling of virtual assets between entities or from one wallet to another. So in summary, if your business ideas sound like any one of these concepts, then you need a license, and you need a crypto license, not just a regular license. So that's kind of the moral of that story. Now, which was a big surprise to a few of our clients, and hence I thought it's timely that we break down the law and kind of make it clear and hopefully accessible to all those crypto enthusiasts who are eyeing to set up a crypto business in the UAE. That, I mean, it's the regime is there, the law is there, the framework is there, the foundation is there, but it's quite detailed, quite robust, very specific, and it's not going to be a walk in the park. So that's in terms of just the regulations and compliance and documents and sort of verifications. Now there's a financial component to it, and that is, how much does it cost to set up a crypto license? And this is as well has, from my experience, seems to have come as a surprise to many because they're not used to pay such fees for just setting up a license and then kind of maintaining it. I mean, the UAE has over the years been kind of transparent in terms of how much a business license costs. It's not cheap, but it's of a certain parameters. And but these kinds of crypto licenses are a few notches up in terms of what they cost. So just to kind of give you an idea, and by the way, as I mentioned earlier, all these different activities, the licensing activities, they can be bundled up, right? So they can. So if you look on for example, VAR public register, and you'll see the 36 companies that have obtained license, some of them, most of them, have one or two activities combined. So when you apply, so it's possible, obviously based on your value proposition and getting the necessary approvals, but in terms of financial commitment, that kind of is all cumulative. So if you have three activities under your license, you'll have to pay three times the cost, or for you have to pay the licensing fees for each one of the categories. And just to kind of get an idea, the rule book has more details, but just to give ideas of what are we talking about, is, for example, for advisory services, the application cost itself is 40,000 dirhams, and then the annual fee is 80,000 dirhams, right? So that's, if you have a license, if you're lucky enough to have obtained a license, you will have to be prepared to pay on an annual basis to renew it 80,000 dirhams. And you'll have to also put an initial capital of 100,000 dirhams. So this is just for advisory services. So 40,000 dirhams for the application fee, another 80,000 dirhams on the yearly basis to renew, and the initial capital of 100,000 dirhams. If you are providing broker-dealer services, that's the application fee is 100,000 dirhams, and the annual fee for renewal is 200,000 dirhams, and the initial capital is anywhere between 400,000 dirhams and 600,000 dirhams plus. So if you obtain a license, or you want a license that provides both advisor and broker-dealer services, then you'll have to combine the $40,000 plus $100,000 for application fee, which is $140,000, and then the annual fee of $200,000 plus $80,000, that's another $280,000. And obviously, the initial capital as well will have to be combined. So cumulatively, let's say if you just wanted to have a crypto license that has advisor and broker-dealer services, you'd have to pay... initial capital would have to be anything from 500,000 to 700,000 dirhams minimum. And that's just for initial capital. And then just the startup fees, you'll have to pay about 140,000 and be prepared to pay almost 300,000 dirhams a year to upkeep the license. So that's just advisory and broker dealer. Now, some of the examples for custody. So if you want a custody license, that is similar to the broker-dealer, the same kind of 100,000 dirhams for the application fee, and the annual fee is 200,000. However, the initial capital you have to commit is 600,000 dirhams or 25% of your overheads. So here the percentages kick in. Then for exchange license, it's, again, 100,000 dirhams for the application fee, and then 200,000 dirhams for annual fee. And for the initial capital, it's 800,000 dirhams to 1.5 million dirhams plus. Then for lending and borrowing, same kind of application annual fees from here on, so it's similar, 100,000, 200,000, and the initial capital is 500,000 dirhams or 25% overheads. And then there's the imagined investment, which is 100,000 dirhams for the application, annual fee 200,000, and initial capital 280,000 to 500,000 dirhams. And then finally, there's the transfer settlement license, and that's the application fee here is a little less, similar to advisory services, it's 40,000 dirhams, and then similar to advisory services, 80,000 per year. However, in terms of the initial capital, because we're talking about transfer settlement services, it's 500,000 dirhams or 25% of overheads. So the numbers speak for themselves. You know, licensing is a serious financial commitment. It's not your typical sort of licensing fees that one would expect to pay for other types of commercial licenses. Okay, so that was tier two in terms of crypto license application. Remember, we started with the commercial license in the specific Emirates-specific economic zone, and then that goes to the crypto regulator and all the sort of corresponding requirements. Now, depending on the type of service that you're looking to provide, you may also be required to obtain approvals from either ESCA, which is the UAE Securities and Commodities Authority, or the central bank. So that's a third tier, right? And then here you will, this is the federal approvals in addition to the Emirate approvals. And so you would be required to obtain the ESCA approvals if, because it's, you know, in cases if you deal with issuance or custody or the exchange and wallets, because, you know, anything to do with exchanges and wallets and custody will also trigger the ESCA regulation and the ESCA approval for obvious reasons, because we're talking about securities and commodities. And then the central bank will also step in as it supervises stable coins, payment tokens, and stored value facilities. So if you're in any one of those services or you want to offer those services, you need to prepare to also obtain, in addition to all the other approvals and all the other licenses, you'll also need to obtain either ESCA and or central bank approvals. And that's, you know, obviously because these are the two federal authorities that have jurisdiction over certain crypto-related activities as per the UAE law. And we can talk a little more specifically about, you know, ESCA, I guess, you know, because my recent experience and examples with a few of my clients have kind of reminded me that, you know, something that they're presenting so simple, it's a simple model, it's a simple idea, will not only require, I mean, you know, something like custody, for example, not only require VAR approval or DFSA in the DFC or Financial Services Regulation Authority from ADGM, it also will require, in most cases, ESCA. So, for example, The ESCA clearly regulates as per, and that's it, there's a specific law, which is the Cabinet Resolution Number 111 of 2022. So it's a fairly new law, and it has its own, ESCA has its own rule book. And so since ESCA regulates anything to do with securities, commodities, or capital market services, so under the ESCA's own rule book, those approvals will be required, or ESCA approvals will be required if, for example, you're dealing with issuance of virtual assets, or like launching a token or a coin for public offerings or private placement, or crypto exchanges. If your platform matches buyer and seller of virtual assets, that will also require ESCA approvals. On the custody and wallet services, if you hold the client's assets, whether fiat-backed or token-based, and that was an example of our client who tried to make it sound very simple in terms of what they were doing, but that's basically custody and wallet services would, additionally to VARA, or the crypto regulator, require also the federal financial regulation approval. And then obviously for all the fund management, such as, you know, those who manage pooled investment vehicles that hold crypto assets, they also require ESCA regulations. So just to kind of give an example, so let's say a company is planning to issue a new stablecoin or a tokenized bond, would require ESCA approval, even if it already holds a VARA license. And then another example, like let's say if a startup wanted to issue a tokenized real estate investment product in Dubai, they obtained a VARA license as an investment management company, but because they were actually issuing tokens to investors, they also need ESCA approval. So as you can imagine, if you want to go in that space, this will take many months and require quite detailed prospectus and disclosure, and will be supposed to subject them to capital market standards. So now, when does the central bank come in? And a few specific examples. Let's say the central bank steps in when crypto activities overlap with payment systems, money transfer, or stored value. So some of the key areas are, you know, as predicted, stable coins, issuance or use of stable coins pegged to fiat currencies, or payment tokens, that's issuing crypto as a method of payment for goods and services. Or stored value facilities, such as digital wallets holding prepaid balances, whether in fiat or crypto. So all that kind of, all those sort of activities would require additionally central bank approval. So some examples, for, let's say a platform offering crypto wallets that allows users to store balances and make payments must also obtain a central bank stored value facility license. Or a business planning to operate a crypto-based remittance services must seek also central bank approvals as it falls under the money services and transfer regulation. One of the other examples, and this kind of was on the back of some of our clients' cases, is like, let's say if you're a Dubai company and you launched a crypto wallet application that allows users not only to store tokens, but also to spend them on goods and services, which, as I mentioned earlier, was what our clients were interested in. So even though the company was licensed under VARA, the moment that the wallet acted as a stored value facility, the central bank license was triggered. And so in this case, you'd also have to apply for the stored value facilities regulation license and prove, among other things, capital adequacy and IT security to banking standards, which, you know, in many ways should be predictable. It should not be surprising, but it seems that it kind of is. Just kind of to summarize, so these are the three tiers. We have the commercial license, we have the crypto regulations, and we have the financial regulations. And often there can be an overlap. And so in addition to having, let's say, a VARA license, you may require as well the ESCA license and the central bank license. Really, your business model will kind of determine whether you stop at the Emirate level approvals or you need to climb one more level up. By the way, there's a number of regulations. It's perhaps a little too tedious for this kind of podcast to go through the different cabinet resolutions that kind of set out this ultimately kind of crypto regulatory framework, a legislative framework in the UAE in terms of why these different authorities kick in for these types of businesses. I guess to answer to some of my clients' maybe unspoken questions. Why such high burden? Why is it necessary? Well, I mean, you know, why the licensing so time consuming, so costly, and so rigorous? I guess to some of us, it's for maybe because I've been practicing law for all too long. It seems very expected and logical and elementary. But ultimately, the business deals with financial transactions, right? And so they carry risks of fraud, market abuse, and money laundering. So that's why the documentation requirements exist and it's so extensive. That's why the compliance framework must be so detailed. And that's why the senior management must be properly qualified and the capital adequacy must be enforced. This way the system is built to filter out casual players and leaving only serious operators, which obviously is in the interest of the public. So just to kind of contextualize, so given this crypto legislative framework in the UAE, where do things stand now? And I've sort of mentioned already, just to kind of imagine what does it mean in terms of actual operators. So on Devara, there's 36 companies that have been historical licensed. There are a few more companies that are under provisional approvals, and that's all listed on Devara's public registry website. So the big names are obviously the Binance, which established its presence and headquarters, actually regional headquarters in the Dubai's DWTC. And then there's the smaller custodians and exchanges and advisory platforms. You know, one example is Ox or and Crypto.com, also licensed by Vara. And then custodians like Hex Trust, which some might have heard about and they were in the news. So these are all have actually obtained their licenses. And by the way, to all those who are thinking of perhaps engaging with a crypto service providers, that's basically your vetting mechanism. If you want to deal with crypto, the advice is obviously lawyer speaking, just go through the properly licensed crypto providers, and then you have the public registry as Vara lists of all those crypto companies that have obtained their proper approvals on the basis of being able to comply with all the government's requirements. So therefore, if you want to deal in the space as a consumer, that's who you should be working with. And the best way to verify it is just go on the Vara public registry and you'll see if the companies are listed there. If those who might have sort of heard in the news and would have followed the news, the likes of the cases of like Binance, there were these announcements. So yeah, they got the license. Well, they didn't get a license. It was provisional license, or there'll be a license issued shortly. And so all of these stories are all kind of all too real, and that they reflect the reality of this sort of legislative framework. So in many of these companies' cases, it took months, if not years, to get licensed. And so some reports will suggest that, challenges ranged from providing capital adequacy to aligning IT systems with Vara standards to satisfying the fit and proper criteria for management. So all in all, the lesson's clear. Even the biggest players don't get a fast track. Everyone must clear the same hurdles. So what's the takeaway? As we all hope for, the UAE is sort of obviously building a crypto in its government payments and in real estate pilots, but that does not mean that it's easy, right? So licensing is still a multi-tiered and regulated process. It takes time, it costs money, and it requires real experience and robust compliance. This is not a market for casual enthusiasts or those looking for a shortcut. It is for serious, well-capitalized businesses that can meet the international standards. So while the UAE is very much welcoming of crypto, but only under standards and accountability. So that's all for this episode of Logical with Ludmila. If you found this episode useful and you will like what we do, you can always find more on our website. That's lylawyers.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And for the full experience, you can watch our video podcast on YouTube. Until next time, stay informed, stay safe, and keep things logical.